This is Cats Podcast, episode number 30. Welcome to my show, everyone. Super happy to have you here. Thank you so much for tuning in. I'm Kat, I'm your host, and in this episode, I chat with George Cooper. George is a self-actualization specialist who helps people empower themselves to live their fullest potential and their most fulfilled life. He questions the common concept of performance and the mindless striving for success and helps people reconnect with what matters to them. And that's actually where he sets himself apart from a lot of life coaches and performance-driven self-help advice. Basis for his work is his own life story, which brought him from being an ambitious kid and a young and very successful startup founder to a huge loss in his early 20s and eventually a complete collapse of his health. His way out, a radical change of his life and lifestyle. And nowadays it's his mission to help others find their authentic and deeply fulfilled path. At the core of his coaching approach is an honest look into what it is that is keeping us stuck in a certain place in life. What it is that is holding us back from living in a truly fulfilled and happy way. And I believe we can all relate to it in one or another way. The feeling that we have to do or that we have to achieve something first before we can be happy or at peace or at ease. And as entrepreneurs or maybe even as employees, we might feel the need to reach that next career step or make more money or finish that prestige project before we deserve and we are able to experience happiness and fulfillment. So George helps us explore what's behind these beliefs, or should I say misbeliefs, and helps us reconnect with our own values. In this episode, we're exploring George's own inspiring story of walking the unconventional road, why striving for success is often linked to a feeling of lack, why self-help strategies often fail when it comes to true change and lasting happiness, and why performance and fulfillment don't have to be opposites, but can go together. I find this last one especially interesting because when we think about personal growth or self-actualization, performance seems more like a thing that we want to shed, that we want to get rid of. So it's either performance or it's chilling at the beach, but not both. So stay tuned to hear why it doesn't have to be this way. And make absolutely sure to listen to the last 5 minutes. George gives some great tips and thought-provoking questions for you on how to use your current circumstances as a feedback loop to discover more authenticity, ease, and freedom. Enjoy. Yeah, how are you today?
Yeah, really good.
Yeah?
Cool. Yeah. Just did a nice little meditation before our chat.
Oh, good.
Just to ground myself. But yeah, I actually had a really nice day. This week I have a few clients who are on holiday or having other priorities. And it's been so good. So this morning I just had like all morning to myself to do things that I normally don't have time to do.
Oh, that's amazing. That's so good. Yeah, I also did my morning practice, but then I had to hop into the shower afterwards. So I'm very happy to have you on today, George. Welcome to my podcast. Your morning sounded pretty good. So how do your mornings normally look like? Is it, it's not always that relaxed?
It's not always that relaxed. It's actually quite interesting because a lot of people say, when people ask me, hey, what do you do? And I said, well, I run a coaching business. And there's this like instant reaction. Oh, that's so chill. So you can just do whatever you want. And I'm like, well, not really. Like I'm running a successful coaching business, which means is that I'm selling my time. So most of the time I'm serving other people, which I really enjoy, which I like. But it means that most of the time I'm in service of other people. My mornings are, they're let's say I live in Bali and my mornings are a little bit different than most people's mornings, because here we really use the morning to start the day. So we wake up at 5:30. I do my morning practice, which includes some movement, often yoga, breath work and meditation. And then I go to the beach with the doggies. And that's such a beautiful moment of the day, just to start at the beach and then see them play and be in nature. Sometimes I go for a surf. But yeah, I really enjoy waking up with the light and living in a warmer climate. Mm. It's nice to wake up earlier and go to bed earlier.
Yeah. Oh, I can imagine. Warmer climates are just so good.
Yeah.
I hope that one day I'm also in a warmer climate. At the moment, we're still going through what feels like a second phase of winter here in Austria. Mm-hmm. So it's again pretty gray outside, but well, eventually summer will come, I guess. So, So for the listeners, just introducing you a little bit, you're a self-actualization specialist, empowering people to live their potential. Mm-hmm. And on your website say you have a disruptive approach to success and well-being. So what does that mean? That's quite catchy.
It's quite catchy, yeah. It is disruptive in a way that it's different from the way we try to achieve success and well-being, or most people are trying to achieve success and well-being. But it's actually not very disruptive, because it's a human approach to success and well-being. And to define that, it is that rather than achieving some idea or belief or a certain position in the future that's going to make you successful, you become really who you are, and that will make you successful. So rather than letting results define who you are and how you feel, you first become who you are. You step in that through authenticity. And from there, you create the results. And those results will get you the most happiness and the most well-being and also the most growth, because that's where you tap into your innate potential.
Mm-hmm. It makes so much sense just hearing this, because it's like chasing happiness when people think, oh, well, if I get that new car, or if I... as you said, if I get that job promotion, then I'll be happy, or if I move to that new place. But eventually it's not. It's just like once you're there, then there's something else coming up that you want or that you are chasing after. So, yeah, your approach makes totally sense to me.
Yeah, you know, I think the motivation for both is the same. So we have this hunger inside of us. We have this hunger, this motivation to actualize our potential. We all have it. But there's something along the road, along our journeys, and often this happens already in childhood, is where we need to separate ourselves from our authenticity, from our innate potential, from our gifts, from our personality traits, from our needs, from our emotions. And we learn to strive for something externally that will validate our worthiness, that will give us love and belonging, or that will give us self-esteem, or that will give us power. Through that way of thinking, we go out in the world and we start to make these decisions. And every time we feel that hunger to actualize our potential, we look for something on the horizon. We look for other people that have that power that we want, or that have that kind of success that we want, or a certain level of well-being. And we go after it. And then we hope that once we achieve that, then we are successful, or then we are powerful, or then we are happy, or then we feel great. But for a lot of people, that is the deception, because once they reach that point, they have this short moment, a brief moment of like satisfaction of achieving that goal, but then they still feel like something is missing. And that is where for at least for some people, the realization comes, hey, I've been giving up my authenticity, and everything that I have achieved is, or everything, certain things that I have achieved don't even align with what is important to me.
Yeah. It's actually quite interesting, because when you were talking about that inner drive, So on one hand, we feel it, you know, we are connected to our core, but then we have problems in, let's say, translating it or bringing it out into the world, implementing it.
Mm-hmm.
So that was just a, just very interesting for me to see when you said it like this.
Yeah. Yeah. It's fascinating. Like working with human behavior, like we all think we're very, very unique, but in a way we're also very similar to each other. We all share the same human needs. And when we grow up in a certain culture and especially in a certain society, like level of society, we often also share similar values. And it's just very interesting to observe how person A tries to get what they want and to meet their value, and how person B does it. They do have the same needs. They do have the same definitions of success, but they approach it in a different way.
Hmm. I'm sure we're going to dive into that deeper a little bit later, but I actually want you to tell us your story, walking the unconventional road. That's how you phrase it. And yeah, I always love starting with people's stories because that's the capturing moment. That's the inspiration. And so.
Okay. Well, where to start? I think just starting off in early childhood, I can say I've been born with an infinite drive to just explore and to walk the extra mile, and basically also to explore the unconventional road. I've always been interested in doing things slightly different, and that also led to some conflict in school and stuff. But I was like, I wanna know more. I wanna learn more. There must be something different. And then in school, that already led to that I didn't really fit into the school system, probably because of that drive, but also because of my personality. Like I'm very introverted, I'm sensitive, I'm highly intuitive. I think in cause and effect, so I question a lot of things. And in school, I had to just learn theory, and you have to learn this, and that is the outcome, and those are the results. And that didn't work for me. And so at a very young age, I kind of learned that I was the black sheep, and that I was stupid, that I wasn't good enough. And that had a big impact on me. And at the same time, I became very good at playing field hockey, basically from the start, but especially like in the first years. And there I learned, hey, if I'm the best, I get what I want. And what I wanted was connection, recognition, admiration, the things that I didn't get in school. So that's already like I started playing hockey from obviously also from a place of joy and from that innate drive to just succeed, but also from a place of lack. And I learned if I'm the best, then I am loved, then I am accepted, then I'm recognized, then I'm admired. And basically that I started using that pattern for everything in my life. So from the age of, let's say, 12, 13, I started applying it to each and everything in my life. I graduated from university, then I had a few corporate jobs, did the same thing. And in those corporate jobs, especially the last job at DDB, an advertising agency, I noticed I was just hitting the ceiling. And it was super difficult for me because there was on the one hand, there was this innate drive to just, walk the extra mile and to actualize my potential, to do something with it. And on the other hand, I needed it in order to fulfill that lack inside. So if I couldn't walk the extra mile, if I couldn't prove myself, it also had an impact on my self-worth. Obviously I wasn't aware of all those things at that age. But then I decided to, we were working with a lot of data-driven marketing for companies like KLM and Ziggo in the Netherlands. Based on what I learned, I was like, okay, hey, I can make this possible for smaller retailers in the Netherlands. And that's how I started my startup company at the age of 24. I started writing my business plan, raised my first investment, and that's where my journey started. And at that same time, when I raised my first investment, and when we were building the project, something really bad happened in my life. Except my best friend died in a car accident, and that was quite tough, because I was at the start of building my startup company, and lots of pressure on me. And at the same time, I had to grieve, and looking back, I understand it now, but it only put it more pressure on my wounds and so on my drive to succeed. Because what really came up there for me is that success became even more important to me. So rather than taking time off and seeking connection and creating time and space to grieve, I became radically focused on becoming more successful. And that's where I started to question it. Like, how is that possible? What is happening here? Why is success so important to me? And obviously looking back, now I understand is that, like, for me, success equals like acceptance, love, and respect. And that's what I needed in order to give myself the permission to grieve, to open up, to have emotions, to have needs. That's how I started my startup journey, which became a 5-year journey, which has been beautiful. We grew the team. We had massive success in the Netherlands and even in Germany and Belgium. And then after 5 years of working really, really hard.
What was the name of the startup? Did you mention it?
Fanly, Fanly. Which was a loyalty platform for small and medium-sized retail businesses. So basically, like, Starbucks has their own mobile application, and with that mobile application, people can buy, people can order, people can receive loyalty points, they can get discounts, they can give rating and feedback. And that's what we basically did for smaller and medium-sized retailers in the Netherlands and also in Germany and Belgium.
Yeah, I wonder if I came across it at one point. I'm not sure.
Could be. Anyway, that was a beautiful journey. But in that journey, I neglected my needs, my values. I gave everything up in order to succeed. And obviously, that came with a price, because after 5 years, I collapsed. I ended up in the hospital with a blood poisoning and a breakdown of my nervous system. And that forced me to step down as the CEO of that company, which was very difficult, but at the same time, the best possible thing that could ever happen to me. Because that was the moment for me that I was still laying in the hospital in quarantine, and it was some sort of silent retreat, because I had to stay in quarantine for 3 weeks. I was hardly allowed to see any people, and I knew my life was over. Like, I was in a really, really bad state, and I also knew, like, so clear that I couldn't go back to that life. It was like no option. But obviously, it came with a lot of questions, because I literally thought that I knew it all. Like, I was this young, thriving startup entrepreneur. I started reading self-help books from the age of like 14. And I thought I knew it all. And then I was laying there in my hospital bed, looking at the ceiling. I was like, I don't know shit. I don't know anything. The only thing I knew is that, like, I wasn't able to go back. I had to start over. And I felt super, super confident in that. It was like, I don't know where I'm going. I don't know where this is going to lead to, but just like that giving up of, I know it all, and giving myself the permission to step out of that identity of the extreme entrepreneur and having to be the best and whatsoever was basically a relief. And even looking back, like, especially with all the knowledge that I have around, like, traumas and adaptive behaviors, I can see how I subconsciously have manifested that disease in order to give myself the permission.
Okay.
To get out of that situation.
Huh. Get it. Yeah. That sounds like a huge moment. You know, on one hand, realizing I don't know anything and really admitting it to yourself. But then at the same time, not being shattered by that, but saying, I know I can't go back. There has to be another way. So, yeah, I love that. That sounds really intense and fascinating.
Yeah, it's what I, and I'm sure we dive into that later, but it's a process that I take my clients through now. And like, sometimes they ask me like, how did you do it? And I, all I have to say to them is like, I've been lucky. Because for me, it was like, there was no other option. I couldn't go back.
Yeah. That sometimes is so true when you don't have any crutches or any, not any other options.
Yeah. When there's just no other option, it is actually easier. Because otherwise we keep holding on to the past and we it's very cliche, but we wanna stay in the comfort zone. So our brains will always choose certainty over uncertainty. So if we don't know where we're going, we will choose for what we already know, even if it's harmful.
Yeah, it's crazy. So when you said, I just want to go back a little bit. You said you had this realization connected to the death of your best friend that you were basically compensating for something with the strive for success. And then your breakdown. So how are these two connected time-wise? Was this realization something that came slowly, that was like a progress? Or did you have that early on, but then still went down the success road, which led to the breakdown? Or was it kind of going hand in hand?
It's been a super gradual process. From the moment my best friend died, I remembered it in my speech on his funeral. I said something like, they may have taken you, but they will never take me. There was like this, it's like, they may have taken your life, but that doesn't mean that they're going to take my happiness. And we played Happy, the song from Pharrell, on his funeral. Mm-hmm. And I even have on my arm tattooed, like, happiness is the truth. But for me, happiness was still like the end result of being successful in my mind. Like that's the belief that I had. And so I became laser focused on becoming successful, because that was like success is happiness and not the other way around. And for me also was like, I need to be successful in order to be accepted. I need to be successful in order to be liked, in order to be lovable, in order to create the time and space that I need in order to grieve. So what it really brought up for me is okay. Just like that I was too much for other people. Like my emotions were too much, me grieving was too much. And that was obviously like that's from growing up in a culture where we don't talk a lot about emotions. So that was a very slow process. And obviously like that song Happy from Pharrell, that remained like playing in my head. And at the same time, like on this startup journey, I started to become more unhappy and I started to compensate a lot for that through other means, like through either working harder, through partying, and through, well, you name it. And I put a halt to that at a certain point, like very consciously, like I don't want to party anymore. I don't want to compensate in that way anymore. Then I got into a beautiful relationship with my stepson, which gave me a lot of meaning. And then that broke down and I got separated from my stepson. And that was like the last final piece. And then I just broke down. That was after 5 years of working really hard and sacrificing myself and putting the needs of employees, business partners, romantic partners, investors above mine. and where my body just said, like, it's enough.
Mm. So you already had this realization that there's something wrong, but you weren't able to grasp it fully and put a stop to it until you had your breakdown, basically.
No, it's hilarious because, like, or hilarious, it's interesting because I've been working with all sorts of therapists for the grief process. I've been working with coaches, like very, very like top coaches in the Netherlands and even internationally. And especially with those coaches, most of the work was still focused on performance. On performance and productivity, because if I would become better at productivity, I would have more time for myself. So they weren't able to address the real problem.
If I would become better at productivity, I would have more time for myself. I just want to capture this because I think this could be like key in our further conversation and key for so many people. It's just like, okay, hold on. So the question is, what am I doing with my time? If I really liberate some time.
Well, and then obviously we see this a lot nowadays in personal development and in the personal development industry or in self-help, self-healing and whatsoever, where we all also promote a lot of people to meditate more or to do more breath work. But sometimes we also just need to question, like, hey, what are we compensating for? Like if you need two hours in the morning to remain a little bit calm throughout the day, then the question is, hey, how is your life aligning with what is important to you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good point. Good point.
And the same goes for all these productivity and performance driven approaches. Do you really want to become more productive? Is that what you want? And so we need to question, why do I want to become more productive?
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to have more time? Time for what?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that is the same with performance. Going back to my example of wanting to become successful. Yes, I wanted to become successful, but one of the key drivers in there as well, the unhealthy drivers, is I wanted to feel connected. I wanted to receive love in order to grieve the death of my best friend.
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy, you know, that you think you have to be successful to have that more space to be able to grieve, but not allowing it yourself right up front. But I can say for myself, and as you said, you know, looking at our society, I guess that's how we tick. You know, there's always this, oh yeah, I will do that, but later, once I've finished this or that, or once I've achieved this, then I have the space.
If I may correct you there, that's how we are conditioned to tick. It's not how we tick as humans.
Oh, we are conditioned to tick. Yeah, good. Yeah, sure. Correct me anytime. You're the expert. So. So let's stay on that road a bit and dive a little bit deeper. So you already touched on it and saying basically a lot of the self-help tools out there are, and the common performance strategies, they are often are a dead end when it comes to true happiness and lasting change. So from your experience as a coach with your clients are high impact, high achieving people that are naturally drawn to performance, and they know how to get the tools, and they believe they know how they can implement it successfully. Can you talk about that a little bit more, dive deeper into that?
What do you mean by that?
So why are those common performance strategies or the self-help tools that people get and understand and apply in their lives, why are they a dead end to true happiness and lasting change?
Well, the answer is very, very brief and short. It's because they encourage people to do more of the same. And so when people come to me, that is basically at the same point as I've been. What most of them are not in hospital or whatsoever, but it's where they have the realization that their current strategies, their current way of living, the current way of leading their business is no longer serving them. It's so obvious. Like, okay, mm-hmm. if I'm going to continue to live to live my life the way I live it, or to lead my business the way I lead it, it's going to lead to a breakdown of something. Could be performance, could be employee satisfaction, employee performance, could be family life, whatever, but it's going to lead to a certain breakdown. And it's so obvious that there's no other option than to change. But before we reach that, we're not willing to give up our past beliefs. So we will, as I just said, we will always choose certainty over uncertainty. We will always choose that conventional road over the unconventional road, even if that conventional road is not giving us what we seek in life, even if we have, even if it's harmful. And that's when we live on that autopilot.
Mm-hmm. So how do you proceed when someone comes to you and tells you what they've done and that there's still something missing, that they're still not feeling happy, that they're not yet fulfilled? Where do you start?
It's really, I use the word unpacking a lot. It's really just unpacking where they are in conflict in a certain area of their lives. So people come to me, and some people come with a business problem and then it ends up being a relationship problem, or the other way around. But in both cases, it's often not a business problem or a relationship problem. It's a childhood problem. So it's an unresolved issue from childhood, where we're looking at unmet needs. So that can be an unmet need for safety. It can be an unmet need for love and belonging or self-esteem, but it's really unpacking it to see it, to eventually go back to, hey, what is the need that you haven't been able to meet for yourself? And that is a lot of the work that I do, is like helping them become aware of that and see if they can find more productive manners in order to meet those needs. So as I just mentioned, as we just discussed, sometimes we don't want to become more productive or more successful. We think we have to become it in order to get something else. So that is a lot of the work that I do with my clients, and how it works is that we don't work on all sorts of service level topics, but we really dive in on a certain area in their life where they experience a conflict or a challenge or like a big opportunity, but don't know how to move forward.
Okay. So you start with you have a certain situation or a certain, I don't want to say goal, but probably a certain, or you phrase a challenge, right? They have a certain challenge, and that's probably the key case you're working on with a particular person.
The process is actually it's I guide them through the four stages of change. And the first stage that we're all in is always denial, where we still focus on the external world. So we feel something is quite off already, but our focus on this is on the external world. So we project it. It's on could be our boss, it could be the society, it could be our parents, it could be in our relationship, but it's not us. We're still in denial. Then the change, the reality of change, becomes more obvious, and we're forced to start looking within. And that's when we go into the next stage, which is resistance. So that brings up a lot of resistance, because we don't want to look at our own weaknesses and insecurities and fears. But that is already, like, I get them in that resistance phase. So that is offering that safe space that we together start to unpack what's really going on there. And then from there, if we start to understand more and create more awareness, and so people become aware of their own incompetences, of their weaknesses, of their fears, of their insecurities, then we can start exploring, which means is that instead of focusing on the certainty, in other words, the past, is that we start exploring the future. Because if we understand the problem, we can start exploring, and we start redefining how you can approach that challenge, how you can approach or solve that problem. And in that exploration phase, we work again, we work a lot on awareness, but also new coping skills to deal with it. And eventually in the fourth phase, where you go to commitment, where you really commit to changing that behavior in a certain area of your life.
Mm-hmm. And what role do values play in there? I know they play a special role, but yeah, can you tell us a little bit more about that? Because you're diving into values as well with your clients.
Yeah, a lot. They're the foundation. What role do values play? I think going back to that, how we approach success is that we aim for something in the future and then hope that it's going to satisfy and fulfill us. We do it because we don't know which decisions are right for us. So we pick something in the future, or we look at someone, a certain authoritative figure that we're like, oh, you look happy, or you look successful, or you look powerful. I want to become like you. So I'm also becoming a doctor, or also want to become a CEO of a certain company. And we do that is because we're not really aware of the things that are important for us. And those are your values. Your values are basically the pillars in your life. That when you live in alignment with them, you feel satisfied and fulfilled. And that when you live in alignment with them, you are able to thrive for a longer period of time. That's when we live in that flow state. So values play a very, very big role in my coaching program, because obviously when somebody is experiencing a conflict or a certain challenge, we start to unpack that and we start to look at, okay, hey, which values have you been suppressing?
Mm.
And oftentimes what I discover with them is those are values like authenticity, autonomy, sovereignty, but also just connection.
Mm.
And so what people are actually looking for, so like I said, they come to me with a business problem. What they're actually looking for is to reclaim their authenticity and to develop the capacity to make the decisions that are right for them. So they feel confident. They don't feel insecure about which decision is right for me. What do I have to do now? I need to set a next big goal to get that high. And so I feel confident of going somewhere. It's just like, they feel safe in their own body, in their own awareness, knowing that the decision that they make today will lead to a more beautiful future.
Hmm. It makes so much sense.
Mm.
Yeah. And that's what I find interesting, because performance plays a key role, or is like one of the key concepts in your work. And what I believe that we look at performance still very one-sided. You already touched on it, but let's go into that a little bit more. So, because often when we think about personal growth or self-realization or radical transformation, that's not directly correlated to performance, but you bring this two worlds, like the personal growth world, let's say like that, and the performance world together in a good and healthy and sustainable way. So let's go into that a little bit more, because you said it's often actually quite necessary for people to have this realization, right? That these are not two opposites end of the spectrum, but they can actually go quite well together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I believe for like true peak performance requires you to tap into your innate potential. It requires you to live in alignment with your values, because if you don't, you're only as good as what you learn.
Mm.
And you're only as good as how much energy you have left. And so in our world, we often see people relying on a lot of willpower and force. And they only become as good, as I already said, as much as they can learn out of books and from other people. But they don't have access to that innate capacity that's within them because they are separated from it. Then another part, if we move through life, if we sacrifice, if we neglect our needs and sacrifice our values, we can never perform in the long run. These are our basic human rights, and Maslow called them our neurotic needs. If we don't meet our basic needs, we become irrational, we become selfish, we become impulsive. And that will affect our performance. That makes us like egoic leaders. That makes us super reactive. That literally narrows our view. It puts people in this I know it all, like I did in my startup phase. So unable to learn new things or take on new perspectives. These are all things that are necessary for the infinite game, for a true peak performance. And so if we really want to actualize our potential and truly make impact and play the long game, then we must combine the two.
Mm-hmm. And in our pre-chat, you said that's also something a lot of people struggle with, right? When they know it's the right time to make a change. Maybe they quit their job, they move to Bali, they hang out at the beach, and then after a while they're like, oh, something's missing again, or that's not me. They kind of feel it. So then we can bring performance back in and look at it
finding that middle ground. I think people that have been overachieving for too long, and whether they burn out or not, or they got so sick of the system that they were in or the company that they worked for, whatever reason, some of them have a tendency to go to the other side of the spectrum. Is I am so free now, or I become a yogi and whatsoever, and they go from like the yang, the doing, to the yin, to the non-doing. And what they do there is that they separate themselves from something that is important to them, because obviously they were on that path of performance for a reason, because they value it. And then they separate themselves from something that's important to them, and they're going to seek it on the other side of the spectrum. So we basically escape from that world where we didn't have the capacity to show up for ourselves, to set boundaries both for ourselves and for other people. But what we also do there is, when we go to the other side of the spectrum, is that we separate ourselves from something that is important to us, because obviously we were on that path because growth and performance are still important to us. And when we separate us from ourselves, we start to miss it. And I think the end goal is to find that middle ground where we can be at peace with ourselves, where we can fully show up, and where we can still perform. And so it's really separating performance from having to neglect your needs and values and bringing them together.
Yeah. And that is, for me, so interesting to see and hear and to look at it, because I believe it really brings a new perspective to the whole discussion. When you don't see performance as something evil, but maybe as part of your true nature or your purpose, but you only have to rephrase it and live it in a more healthy and whole way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I think I spoke around this topic lately on another podcast, is we also just need new role models. And that's one of my main drivers is to help create those role models, is that we grow up and that we can see people build incredible businesses whilst they're also taking care of themselves and whilst they're good parents to their children.
Yeah.
Because we can build thriving businesses without having to sacrifice the things that are important to us. And for me, that was my, like, I never decided to move to Bali. I only wanted to come here to distance myself and to give myself a chance to recover and gain some new perspective. And I gained new perspective because I saw successful entrepreneurs, very successful entrepreneurs, doing it in a different way.
Mm.
I saw them going out for a surf in the morning. I saw them in a happy and thriving relationship. I'm like, okay, wow, life can also be lived that way.
Yeah, it's not just getting up at 5, drinking a coffee, going to the office, being all day behind a screen. And
yeah,
I love that. I wrote down one of the questions you raised in our pre-chat. There you said, well, maybe the key question for a lot of people is, why is or why was performance so important for me? There's something else that's more important. What's driving me? So,
yeah, I think it's what I just discussed already, like with a lot of clients that come to me. I call it the first mountain syndrome, and I borrowed that from David Brooks, who wrote a whole book about it. Is we set out on these journeys with a certain promise that if we achieve X, Y, Z, then we're happy. And so for a long time, we think we want to be successful and perform or become more productive. But that's climbing up that first mountain. And at the top of that mountain, something is promised to us, whether it's power, whether it's status, whether it's recognition, whether it's happiness, whether it's the right to be authentic, to finally show ourselves to the world and speak our truth, to finally be a valued member of society, to finally be acknowledged by your parents. I don't know what it is, but there are a variety of reasons for this. But once we're up there and we notice, like, and most people need to walk up that mountain a couple of times to come to that realization. In other words, they set another goal and they need another promotion and they need to raise another investment. But at a certain point, they come up this first mountain and again, they're like, this ain't working for me anymore. This is not why I'm doing it for. And that's when they start to question, like, why is performance so important to me? What do I get when I reach that top of the mountain? What's that short relief that I get there?
Hmm.
What is it that I'm after? What is the underlying promise? And even more important, what is it that I want to feel? Because in the end, we're just chasing feelings.
Yeah. Which brings us back to the values, I guess, that are driving us inside. Are they also directly correlated to the feelings?
Hmm. The way I shape the value systems are directly related to our psychological needs, our basic psychological needs. And those are obviously related to our emotions. So when we are in conflict with them, when we neglect them, we experience all sorts of emotions, from sadness to anger to resentment and so on. And when we live in alignment with them, we experience all sorts of positive emotions, from love, belonging, peace, fulfillment. So they're definitely connected, yeah.
Hmm.
But I think in the end, what we're all looking for is like, it's like, what is it that we want to feel? We want to feel safe in order to live our truth, in order to live our values, in order to unleash our innate potential. But in order to feel safe, we still believe that we first need to become someone or earn something from society or from certain people in our life.
That's actually one point I wanna touch on. this feeling of safety, because that's often what, you know, keeps us from walking the unconventional road. That's why so many people don't do it, because they feel, oh, well, if I'm leaving this, if I'm leaving my momentary home base, I'm not safe anymore. So you already talked a little bit about bridging these two worlds, you know, or these two roads, the unconventional road and the conventional road. And I want to go into this just a little bit more, because on my podcast, there are a lot of people speaking about their freedom lifestyle, how they made that leap of faith, how they made their dream come true, left that conventional life to the unconventional life. So how can we bridge that also in regards to the feelings? Because you said to the values, and you said values are basically an extension of our gut feelings. And that was something that really resonated with me.
Mm. Yeah, beautiful. Thanks. I love that. That's indeed how I explain it often. Like, it allows us to trust our gut feeling again. So in my latest article, I gave the example, like, if somebody breaks down our door with any permission, it's very obvious to us that somebody is violating our privacy and personal space, like our personal space. And most likely we will defend against it or even fight against it, whether it's calling the police or getting this person out of your house, right? But when other things in our life happen, far more on like a personal and emotional level, if someone is breaking down our authenticity, so when somebody is violating our boundaries or our needs, we have that same feeling. We know and feel that it isn't right, but we can't tap into it with our conscious awareness. So we don't have that connection between our gut feeling and our conscious awareness. So what we do is we push those feelings away. But when we start honoring those feelings by looking at the areas where we experience tension, conflict, and those things, we can start looking, okay, which values have you been suppressing? And we can start defining and articulating these values, that we know exactly what it is, what we need in those situations, which allows us to put boundaries in place, but also to make decisions that are aligned with those values. And that is the process that allows people to go on the unconventional road in a more gradual and gentle way, because it doesn't have to be always like, I live in Berlin now, I'm a high performer and I'm going to live in Bali. It doesn't have to be that way. Like we've been speaking about it, you can just walk that or stand in the middle ground, walk the middle road. Maybe you don't even have to leave your job, because sometimes that's just an escape. Maybe it's about developing the capacity to express certain boundaries and to make decisions that are right for you. Maybe you figure out that it's actually a very nice working environment, and that it's not so much about the environment not honoring your needs, but about you not honoring your own needs. And that's the same for a relationship. Sometimes we're like very positively surprised by how well people are willing to treat us if we treat ourselves in the right way.
Mm. Yeah.
And sometimes we also come to the realization that we've been working in a very toxic environment, or that we've been in a very toxic relationship. So that, and we come to those realizations through stepping forward, through reclaiming our authenticity, through expressing our needs, and we know it's okay. Hey, there's just no space for me here. And as a child, you were dependent on your environment. You were fully dependent on the support of your parents in order to survive. But as grown-up adults, we have an opportunity to leave. We have an opportunity to set out on our own journey. And again, then when we understand what we are in conflict with, then it also becomes easier to make decisions that are right for us, to choose that next option. It gives us a certain sense of confidence. I know what's right for me.
confidence, and then we have the safety in there again, that feeling of safety, being sure about something. And
we don't need goals anymore. So a lot of times when I speak on podcasts, one of the last questions is, okay, what's your ambition? What are your goals? I have a vision. I have ambition. I do have goals because they're great for planning, and it allows me to increase the performance of the company and to make more impact. But I don't need goals in order to feel safe, because goals are also keeping me away from letting things unfold the way they have to unfold. And I know by now, after walking or after being on this journey for 4 years and truly living in alignment with my values and refining them over and over again, I know that the decisions I make today result in a brighter future. Because I have so much evidence that the decisions I make are in alignment with the things that are important to me. So I don't need a goal. I don't need to know where I'm going, because I can trust. I know that my decisions will lead me to a brighter and more meaningful place.
That is so beautiful.
It takes away a lot of the stress in life.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And also a lot of the pressure of getting to a certain point in your life, because then you're happy, or then you can rest.
Yeah. And that's the thing we're just constantly fighting, right? This, oh, once I'm there, I will have peace in my mind. Once I'm there, I will be happy. Once I'm there. And when you just said you don't need goals. Yeah. Hell yeah, that's the true liberation, isn't it? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You can give up control. That's the beautiful thing. And obviously, if you speak about safety, you speak about trust, because you trust that you make the right decisions. You trust that life will unfold for you, not against you, for you. So when you truly live from that place, like from a place of authenticity and wholeness, then you don't need control. And a very simple example, I've been working with my agency on the new branding and a new website, and we're fully in it, and it's going to be amazing. And last week they reached out to me that they need like 10 more days, maybe 2 weeks. And literally what came up to me is like, yeah, it's fine. Whereas my old self would be like, no, it needs to be live at that date because that will lead to this and that. I'm like, yeah, cool.
I love that. That's so good. Yeah. I think it's really a breeze of ease for a lot of people listening, I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what I wish for a lot of people. Those are my hopes.
I would love to close, although these were beautiful closing words, I would love to close with a more of a concrete tip for the listeners, if that's possible. You said, or I think you wrote it on your website, use your current circumstances as a feedback loop to discover and integrate the untapped parts of your potential. So where could anyone start, you know, looking around at how they live, how they do things, how they feel? Where could they start to just open up or bring back in a bit more ease and freedom?
Well, first of all, looking where you experience that ease and freedom. So what are the current peak experiences in your life where you feel truly fulfilled, where you feel satisfied, where you feel loved? If those things are already available, then super simple exercises is just asking yourself, hey, how can I cultivate more of this? How can I cultivate more of this in my life? And what is needed to do that? That is the easy part. But obviously, like we've been speaking a lot about internal tension, internal conflicts, or even external conflicts, challenges in our lives. And that's where the big opportunity is, because if these peak experiences are already there, we're naturally drawn to them. So that's all good. But it's the challenges that we often walk away from because we don't really know how to cope with them. So to make it a little bit more practical is I would ask you to just literally sit down and ask yourself, hey, where in my life am I experiencing tension, conflict, or a challenge? What is happening there? What is happening there? And get clear on that. And if you have clarity, you can go deeper there. Why is it happening? Is it happening because of external circumstances? Are you completely powerless? And I'm inviting the listeners there to start speaking from an I statement, to take back all the responsibility. So I experience this because I do X, Y, Z. Because I allow people to cross my boundaries. Because I choose to do, 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 do. From there, you can answer the question as like, how am I coping with this challenge? Am I suppressing it? Am I pushing it away so I don't have to deal with it? Am I compensating for it? So yes, the challenge is there or the tension is there, but I choose to compensate for it through, could be binge watching Netflix, could be shopping, could be socializing, could be being even more busy so I don't have to deal with those feelings. Or am I truly, truly taking responsibility to solve the problem? And if you're not yet taking full responsibility to solve that problem, then the question is, what would that look like? What would that look like if I take full responsibility for solving this problem?
Yeah, wow. That's a full day of work. Probably even more. Yeah, I love that. Thank you so much. That's, I hope you guys listening are walking away with a good impulse of food for thought and are keen to sit down and just observe yourself and self-study yourself a bit more. So if people are intrigued now working with you, I will link to your website in the show notes. Do you do one-on-one coaching, right? Or is it also group classes?
I do mainly, like, for 95% of the time, I do one-on-one coaching because I strongly believe that that's the most powerful way to impact, to make an impact. And I do once every 2 months, I have a group workshop called Reclaiming Authenticity, which is about reclaiming your authentic nature, your innate potential in a certain area of your life, which includes a lot of the value work and setting boundaries. And then, it's an inclusive group of 15 people max.
Okay. So is that also possible online?
Yeah, it's also possible online. Yeah. It's fully COVID ready, so everyone around the world can join.
Yoo-hoo! Yeah, amazing. Is there anything else you would like to add? Anything we didn't touch on or you would love to tell the listeners?
No, like, I think we had a beautiful closure with using your life as a feedback loop, like the experiences in your life as a feedback loop to explore and expand your innate potential. And getting curious rather than defensive. So rather than being defensive towards the things that are out of alignment and projecting things outward, is like really getting curious what is going on and what can I learn from it, and make it that little self-study to learn more about yourself and eventually to get to that question, hey, what would it look like if I take 100% responsibility for my life? How could I better cope with this?
Yeah, so good.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for your time today, for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Sharing your wisdom. And yeah, thank you so much for this very deep conversation.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. All right. I hope you liked this episode. I hope you're leaving with a good portion of food for thought. So let us know what you think. Were there any aha moments in there for you? What was most fascinating? Send us an email. You can find my email below in the show notes, or you can find us on Instagram and send us a message there. Thank you so much for listening. And if you liked this episode, please share it with friends, share it on your socials. And if you're on iTunes or Apple Podcasts, you can also please leave a 5-star rating and a little review if you're inspired. Thank you so much. Every share helps to spread my mission of freedom and empowerment. And very grateful for you listening. And I hear you next time. Bye-bye.